Hello, I'm Will Yeoman, and welcome to another episode of the Pod Well Travelled, where I'm joined, as usual, by travel editor Stephen Scarfield and travel journalist Mogens Johansson. Gentlemen, welcome again to the show.
Thank you very much.
Good to be here, as always.
As always. We also always say we've got an exciting show lined up for you, but this time we really mean it because we've got a couple of terrific...
I hope we always really mean it. We particularly mean it.
It's more so than usual. We have got two new series that we're kicking off today. One is... I've got to get this right. Travelling for Travellers.
Traveller for Travellers. Okay. Because our traveller is Nicole Rixman.
Yes, who's Flight Centre's manager for three states.
For three states. Of Australia, West Australia, South Australia, Northern Territory.
Yes.
Very experienced traveller, 77 countries, and obviously very experienced with the back end of travel, you know, the business of booking and booking engines and those sorts of things. So a fantastic person for us to have on the team.
Okay, and today we've got her taking us to New Zealand.
Yep, which will be, you know, obviously we've got our sights on that as a very good... essentially, for Western Australia, it's a long-haul destination, and that will be, you know, one of our first great kind of options as things ease up, continue to ease up. Yes, well, we're going to start this regular segment by talking about New Zealand, and you've just returned quite recently before the shutdown that we've just had. But it really is an invigorating place to think about and to plan for the future, isn't it?
Absolutely. New Zealand is breathtaking, and I think it's one of those places, being so close to home, we often forget that it's a wonderful destination to visit and spend a bit of time in.
Yeah, particularly because access usually is so good through Auckland in particular. And that brings us to a bit of a problem, doesn't it? Because North Island is kind of the poor cousin very often in terms of travel, because South Island has such spectacular landscape, and probably as visitors, I think we start in South Island. So let's start there, and let's go first to Christchurch, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Christchurch is, you know, a wonderful city. Considering everything it's gone through, the devastation it's had with the earthquakes, I think it's really a testament to how that city's rebuilt. And the culture and the, you know, the artwork and everything you find, and how the city is really stuck together and banded together to really make something of it. And I think, you know, they're definitely proud Christchurchians, and I think you really sense that when you visit, which is great.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And not only that, you have to say this delicately, but I mean, there are aspects they literally sat down and thought about what they wanted to be in future. And in the rebuild, it was very much a community-driven idea of how they wanted to refill the gaps in the city and how that would work. So I think it is a refreshed place through those circumstances too.
Yeah, definitely. And you see that in many aspects, the architecture, the shipping containers they've put together, and the cultural hub that they've created. I think it's really been a rebuild that's been about the people, which I think has been wonderful.
And the food is good.
Oh, the food's amazing. Talk about a food hub. I mean, New Zealand is fantastic in general, but I definitely had some of my best dining experiences in Christchurch, that's for sure.
Now, what are we drinking with the dining experience? Because I know you have a weakness.
I do have a weakness. I have two weaknesses. I do enjoy a nice fine wine, and I do enjoy my beer, actually. And beer, actually, in New Zealand, you can't go anywhere without seeing a microbrewery, which is really quite interesting.
You surprised me. I thought we were going straight to Pinot.
Well, I mention this because, you know, I had my best beer experience in Christchurch. There's a wonderful microbrewery there. They have the most microbreweries per capita in the world. So I was quite happy in that aspect.
Yep, fantastic to do that. All around the city, as you say, dining's terrific. The produce, of course, is superb. The Pinots, the wines from that region are very, very good, right through Otago.
Definitely. And now Otago is a wonderful region to visit, particularly if you are a Pinot drinker, that's for sure. You'll certainly find a nice drop while you're there.
Somewhere else, just to take us out of the town a bit, is up to Hanmer Springs, which are hot pools, actually served up in nice little resorts, but also public places where you can go. And I really like that. So anyone who's thinking about South Island in future, I'd put Hanmer Springs on the itinerary too. Getting around is quite easy for us, of course. Did you drive
Yeah, definitely. So hired a car and drove around, which I think is a wonderful way to see New Zealand because it's nice and easy and accessible. And I think that makes it, you know, a great way to just duck in and really tailor your itinerary to, you know, what you want to experience. Because the great thing about New Zealand is it has everything. And I think by hiring a car, you're not limiting yourself and you can really, you know, get into the back streets, get into some of the wonderful national parks and certainly take yourself to some of the beautiful places. You can go hiking, walking and all the rest of it. And a car's the best way to explore.
Yep. I think we've got to go to Queenstown, Wanaka next, haven't we, surely? Because whether, you know, obviously we know Queenstown, particularly for the winter sports. I actually like the style of skiing there because you're in the village out of the snow and you go up into the snow every day, and I kind of like that. But lots to do in summer as well. And then Wanaka is just a different sort of place near Queenstown, but you like that?
Yeah, Wanaka's wonderful. You know, not far away from Queenstown, and it makes for a lovely drive, but also, yeah, very accessible to the ski grounds if that's what's taking you there. But it's beautiful both in summer and winter, you know, because of the lovely scenery and hikes as well.
Yeah, I love it in summer because the kayaking for me is a big part of it and walking is a big part of it. So all of these activity places where they're set up for winter sports easily translate into summer activities as well. My choice there would perhaps be to stay in Wanaka for half the time and Queenstown half the time. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, look, I think absolutely you can definitely spend a good amount of time in each destination. Both are wonderful places. I think Queenstown, if you want to be in the thick of it, you know, there's a lot more going on. It's quite loud, quite busy, but wonderful as well, but, you know, has got a lot of tourists visiting. But Wanaka is a little bit more sleepy, but still wonderful.
Yeah, because you can't miss the Ferg Burgers in Queenstown. They're the thing to eat there. I've got to take us on because it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, just in your mind, you travel these roads, driving these roads, and everything takes longer there. And indeed, our conversation, you know, once you start talking in detail, there's so much in quite a small area to Australians, but you do have to allow time, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the thing. You look on a map and you think, oh, that's only a two-hour drive, but you're going to want to allow time to really stop because the scenery is just wonderful. You're going to want to pop in, go for a little walk, maybe, you know, like you said, visit some, you know, one of the wonderful waterways. You can go kayaking and really explore the activities that, you know, New Zealand's really renowned for.
Now I'm going to do a bad thing and we'll miss out Nelson and Collingwood Spit, which are a favourite place, but we really should end up in Picton and Marlborough. So the Marlborough region for wines, this is one of your weaknesses. Are we going wine touring there? It's fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. And not only wineries, but the food experiences that you have around there. There's some wonderful restaurants nestled in the little wineries. You can even hire bikes and ride between the wineries as well, which is pretty wonderful.
That's a really good point. That's a good idea. I've got to throw something else in here because I'm not really an aviation – well, I spend a lot of time in planes usually, but the Omaka Aviation Centre is incredible. I think it's probably the best museum in the world. It's actually Peter Jackson – the director of the Lord of the Rings films, of course, collects World War One planes, and this is mainly his collection in this Omaka. But he got his set people to style up each of these planes, and it's just the most amazing place to visit. It's extraordinary. So Omaka, something definitely to have on the list for future. And around Picton, I mean, just some terrific walking, kayaking. Just a great, I think it's a really good base. I really like that.
Yeah, well, Picton's a wonderful base because, well, not only is it the gateway for the ferry, but if you've travelled a little bit further west, there's even Golden Bay, which is just absolutely breathtaking. I actually thought I would only spend there a night there visiting a friend, but I ended up staying four nights because the national park around there is just incredible, and the walks and the hikes and the waterways really is breathtaking.
Yep. Look, we've done it. We've exactly fallen into the trap of just talking about South Island. You know, it is the princess. So let's think about North Island sometime in the future. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll look forward to talking to you again, Traveller for Travellers.
Thank you for having me.
So we're just going to talk a little bit about what's coming up in this Saturday's travel section. And we might start with Moens, because you're sort of revisiting Kangaroo Island, which is great, because obviously that's something that was an area that was devastated by the bushfires, and now we're seeing some regeneration, aren't we?
Yes, it caught my eye this week. There's a new tour starting over there that sort of focuses on that particularly. And, probably about 10 months ago, I had the pleasure of visiting South Australia and had a great time there, cruising the Murray River, visiting McLaren Vale and Barossa Valley and so on. But what I looked forward to the most prior to going was visiting Kangaroo Islands and or Island. And it was devastating to learn not long after that, virtually all of the national park there had burnt down, and lots of wildlife died in the fires and so on. But there's green shoots reappearing again, and tourism is slowly sort of kicking off. And there's this new tour arranged by a company called, well, it's really Sea Link Associated, but it's called Kangaroo Island Odyssey. And it's a sort of specialist guide that takes you out, small groups, out into the national park and sort of show you how the place is regenerating.
Oh, that's fantastic. So have you got some details there? Have you got a website link or anything we can give our listeners?
There's a package that basically it costs $599 per person, and it includes pickup in Adelaide, or at Adelaide or Glenelg hotels, the return SeaLink ferry, and accommodation at the Kangaroo Island lodge at American River. And then there's a full day of touring, visiting Seal Bay Conservation Park, Flinders Chase National Park. There's meals, entry fees, everything is included basically. So it's a pretty good value tour.
That sounds amazing. And of course, when I say our listeners, I mean our South Australian listeners for the moment, who are legion, of course.
Yeah. And of course, out of Western Australia, South Australia also has this situation, very much under control at the moment.
Yes. So it's possible we may be.
As we said with New Zealand, I think South Australia is another, probably pretty, important.
So look, it makes sense to talk about tours like this.
Yeah, bearing in mind that a lot of the audience, we want to be safe as well. So we're going to be circumspect about where we travel to when we can. And I think South Australia will be, high on the card. Super direct flight, easy.
And the beauty of Adelaide and, the surrounds there, everything is so close. It's, it's a short drive out to the Barossa, McLaren Vale and so on. And even heading over to Kangaroo Island is really, you could do it as a day trip if you wanted to take your own car over or something like that. But if you're part of a tour, it's generally speaking a two-day trip. But it's well worth, there's lots to see. It's not just the national park there, Penashaw and Kingscote are lovely places to visit, and it's a lovely place. It really was a pleasure visiting earlier.
Do you know, people quite often ask me if the things I still got on my list to do, and one of them is to swim with the cuttlefish, which come into breed in a bay near Adelaide.
Any particular cuttlefish or just...
No, I've seen cuttlefish a lot. They're incredible things, because
they are magic. Yeah,
they send this sort of, colour, vibrating colour through their bodies. Yeah. But imagine being in there with tens of hundreds of thousands of them.
I mean, I used to do a lot of scuba diving a few years ago, and one of the favourite sea creatures you can come across is a cuttlefish, because they're so curious. They're not afraid of you, and then they change colours and they seem to have a real character.
It's really interesting and brilliant. And if you follow them and watch them just performing, it's quite something, because they just mesmerise their prey, and with this light show, and when they really fired up, I followed one in Papua New Guinea for like half a day, just about. This thing was wild. It was amazing. But to see them in South Australia would be a treat. Maybe this year.
Maybe this year.
Yeah, or maybe later this year.
We're staying positive. So, look, I've invited local author Amanda Curtin onto the show. Many of our listeners will know her for novels such as The Sinkings. She's been widely and widely acclaimed. Both acclaimed.
As she should be.
And in fact, you guys share the same publisher,
fantastic.
Don't you?
Yeah, she's fantastic.
UWA Publishing. Yeah. Yeah. So she also travels a lot, not just for research, but also for pleasure, sometimes combining the two. She's been to some terrific places during her career. And for this episode, she's going to take us to Paris.
It seems to me that when you're traveling as a tourist, foremost among the things that come to the fore really are presence. It's all about presence. It's about what's there, the things that you wanted to see, that you've longed to see. You've got a list of them sometimes. I remember going to Paris, for example, with my sister the first time she had experienced it. And we had a long list of things that she'd never seen before, the Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, the Paris cafes, the windmills of Montmartre, all of these wonderful things that we went specifically to see. Whereas I compared that to the kind of research I do when I'm researching, traveling that I do when I'm searching for writing. And often what comes to the fore there among your experiences is more a sense of absence, especially when you are researching historically. So take Paris, for example. Paris, the Paris that you're looking at is not the Paris necessarily that you're going to research. It's a Paris of another time, a time that's gone, a time where a lot of the things that you would want to see no longer exist, of course. So my most recent trip to Paris was to research for Kathleen O'Connor of Paris. And what I would have loved to see is Kate's studio. And I stood at the a part of Avenue du Maine in Montparnasse where it truncates, the avenue stops. It was subsumed in the 1940s for the railway extensions. And so I know when I'm standing there that I'm only, say, 20 metres from where Kate's studio was, but of course there's nothing there. I still felt it, though, and those are the kinds of things that you remember. You remember the feeling of standing there and feeling that closeness with the past, but really it's an illusion because there is nothing to see. Similarly with the Luxembourg Gardens, that's a place that Kate painted in a lot, and I had been for months studying Kate's paintings of the Luxembourg Gardens, and so when I went there this time, although I was familiar with the gardens, I'd been there before, this time I was missing things like the beautiful old wrought iron benches that used to be there and the folding chairs, and it used to be little kiosks all through the park. Even the features that Kate would paint, the beautiful long skirts of the late Belle Epoque era, the extravagant hats. I looked around and I saw a lot of things that Kate would never have seen in her time, but I was missing the things from that earlier time. One of my favourite places in Paris is Île Saint-Louis. It's one of the two islands in the middle of the Seine. They're both connected to the north and south banks by little bridges, and they're actually connected to each other too. So the easternmost of those two is Île Saint-Louis, and the larger one that is more familiar probably to tourists is Île de la Cité, which is where Notre Dame is. But Île Saint-Louis is this beautiful little long thin island. I sometimes think that it's almost like a parallel Paris because there are so few people comparatively there than than anywhere else I've ever been to in Paris. There are no vehicles. When you look at the island, there's a main street running through the centre. There's a perimeter road going all around the island and a few little cross streets. And that's it. On that main central road, there are some beautiful old shops, some interesting shops, the sort of thing you don't see elsewhere. And there are some lovely little bistros down the Notre Dame end. And that little bridge that connects the two islands is... I've only been there... I don't think I've ever been there, actually, that I haven't seen some wonderful buskers. You get some terrible buskers in Paris, but there always seems to be good ones there. And, of course, Ile Saint-Laurent is the home of Bertillon ice cream, Paris's famous ice cream. And as an aficionado, it's almost like a pilgrimage to go to Bertillon. The thing that I love to do in Ile Saint-Laurent is walk around that perimeter road. You hardly ever see anyone else there because there's no shops. There are just these beautiful, very tall, elegant, pale stone buildings. Presumably they're residences because there's, as I say, no shops, there's no sign of commerce. What I like to do is just look up at those gorgeous long windows on the upstairs floors. They look so elegant. There are beautiful window boxes and balconies and the flutter of a blind, a flutter of a curtain or a blind, and sort of just wonder who lives up there and what they're doing. And I also wonder if they ever look outside those windows and don't marvel at the view that they must have of the city, whichever side you're on. They just must be beautiful. Another place I love in Paris is Les Puces de Saint-Ouen at Port de Clignicourt, up in the north, just outside the perimeter road, a ring road around Paris. Very different from Ile Saint-Louis. It's a flea market, but it's a 7 hectares of flea market, like little worlds inside a larger world, because there are about 14 precincts and each of them has its own speciality, its own character. There are always crowds of people. There are like a lot of markets, it has a kind of seedy atmosphere to it sometimes. You look around and you think this is a place where really anything could happen, and it's a place that you keep a close eye on your wallet as well. But it's a great place to wander around. You cross the road and it feels like you've crossed into another country almost. It's so different. You might cross over from a place that feels very sort of congenial and a lot of amicable bartering and bantering among people. You cross over and suddenly you feel, okay, this is serious commerce. These are serious dealers in antiques and whatever. And window shoppers not so much allowed around there, or not so much welcome. But I have loved spending time there. People watching, it's a great place to watch people and, of course, their dogs, because Parisians and their dogs are inseparable. And to just, I've loved going through old boxes of postcards, old prints, old posters, artifacts of old Paris. So it's a place that you could spend many days. And I've been twice now and I've really enjoyed it both times.
Stephen, we're looking at clothing, travel-related clothing, in this Saturday's West Australian travel section.
Yeah, well, winter's a bit embarrassing in Western Australia, isn't it, really?
You mean it's not a real winter?
It's not a real winter. I mean, it's a faux winter, should we say.
Yes.
I mean, you know, having spent a lot of times outdoors, as Moans have and you have in other parts of the world, I mean, you know, winter here is pretty benign, really. But even so, you know, you can make winter almost you know, unobvious by your choice of clothing. Mm. So I put up a list of 6 pieces of clothing that I think really change winter. And they all have, to me, they all have extraordinary stories as well. If I just mention one, I mean, steel blue boots are actually made here in Western Australia, in Malaga. Mm. fantastic, you know, by a great company, ethical company, making something here in WA, something very, very good. So we've kind of got a list of things that, you know, Wellington Boots have a tremendous story behind them. So there's all sorts of things in there.
So clearly when you're selecting something to feature or to write about, you think about the backstory, you think about the ethics around
the product.
Well,
this is all stuff that I wear.
All those kinds of things.
This is all stuff I wear too. But as we all do, I mean, we'd like to be thoughtful in our purchases, I suppose. We all like a story rather than just picking something off the shelf. But this is all gear that I've got and wear. So, yes.
Okay.
Particularly mine. Moans is having a go next week. Of course, with his Danish roots, I don't know, yeah. It'll all be heavy duty.
We haven't got real winter gear here. Yeah. Yeah. Lots of colourful knitwear. And
well, I can't wait. Handed by you, of course.
Yeah, yeah,
yes,
of course. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see that, I have to say. Okay, now, as always, you can catch us in writing, as we've discussed in Saturday's travel lift out in the West Australian, but also online at thewest.com.au. And there's so much happening online nowadays, isn't there, for us?
There is, and it's probably just worth emphasising that, you know, in addition to the pages, I mean, we also have reduced print space compared with January.
Yes.
Obviously, we are, you know, an adjunct part of the travel industry, and we all know how that suffered. So, you know, our advertising obviously creates space in print, and that's reduced. So we're doing a lot of material online. I mean, a lot of extra stories that are unique.
Well, that needs to be emphasized. We're actually doing unique content, so you won't have read these in the pages.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So, you know, a lot of good stuff. And also, I mean, obviously the online platform for us gives us a great place for writing very current stories. Mm. So when things happen that are, you know, if it's a short-term deal, for example, and with a limited time frame, might not last until Saturday, We can run all of that online. So
it can be very responsive, can't we?
Yeah, and I think also if I can just add to that if audience here, you know, if you sign up for, and you don't have to be in Western Australia, which is nice. So if you sign up for eTravel, our digital edition, which comes out on Wednesdays and is delivered to your inbox, that also is full of unique content. So if you read the pages of Travel in the West Australian on Saturday, you can have a completely different edition on Wednesday for free. And if you're not in Western Australia, you can have that and stay in touch with us, you know, in the written word on Wednesdays through eTravel. Now, you can do that by going to the subscribe area of thewest.com.au/travel.
Correct.
Or you can go to westtravelclub.com.au and just click to become a registered member, which means nothing more than you will receive that free eTravel digital edition on Wednesdays.
Absolutely. And I think it's worth emphasising that our online presence is very much an extension of what we do in print, and it's not just like, you know, reheated stories.
So, yeah, leftovers.
It's fresh. It's fresh.
It's absolutely
and
fresh.
Wholesome.
Fresh, wholesome, and suiting that forum. You know, we write specifically for that.
Absolutely.
And I've just done a couple of stories this morning.
Let's just say our goodbyes. Moans, thanks again for coming on the show.
Absolute pleasure.
Stephen.